This is a podcast from the University of Manchester's Jodrell Bank Centre for Astrophysics. For more information, see jodcast.net.
The night sky for April 2014. Well, as the sun dips below the horizon and it gets dark, the constellation of Gemini, which includes the planet Jupiter, of course, at the present time, is setting over towards the west. The sky towards the south isn't that full. The major constellation that we'll see in the south is Leo the Lion, with its bright star Regulus. If you look along underneath perhaps the tummy of the lion, to the left from Regulus, there's some very nice galaxies. M95, M96, M66, M65. Those are the numbers, of course, from Messier's catalogue. And they can be found on a good dark night with a reasonable sized pair of binoculars, or of course with a small telescope. Over to the left of the lion's tail, we have above Coma Berenices and below Virgo. And the area there is called the realm of the galaxies, because we're looking towards the Virgo cluster, which is actually the heart of the Virgo supercluster. It's the largest cluster, well over 1,000 galaxies, in our local part of the universe. Again, with a small telescope coupled or allied with a very dark sky, there are lots and lots of things to see. The bright star over towards the southeast is in fact Arcturus in the constellation of Bootes. And just to its left, a little circlet of stars, which is called Corona Borealis, the Northern Crown. A little bit later on, from perhaps 11 o'clock, you might see a bright star rising in the northeast, and that's Vega in the constellation of Lyra, heralding really that rather lovely region of the sky we see in the summer, which includes Lyra and Cygnus the Swan, and also the Milky Way passing down through them. Almost overhead in April, in the evening, is in fact Ursa Major, the Great Bear, with of course the Plough. If you look at the four stars that make up the plough bit, then start from the lower left and go up to the upper right, the brightest, which is called Dubhe, and go about the same distance, you come to another very nice pair of galaxies, M82 and M81. M82, the cigar galaxy, looks very odd. It's a starburst galaxy where lots of stars are being formed, and there are lots of supernovae. And of course there was one a couple of months ago, which is just about still visible, so I'm told by my friends who observed it just the day before I was making this recording. Again with binoculars, a nice thing to look at is this middle star of the three stars that make up the handle. It's Alcor and Mizar. Mizar the brighter, the horse and rider. And if you look with a telescope, you'll actually see that Mizar is a double star. It's rather nice. And in fact, in the same field of view as those three, there's also a rather smaller reddish star. Makes a very nice little view with a small telescope. Well, what about the planets? Well, Jupiter has had a superb apparition in the last few months, as high in the sky as it ever gets, essentially. So it's a bit past its best now, but you can see it soon after nightfall, when it's sort of closest to the meridian and so highest in the sky. Its magnitude is still minus 2.2, it's falling a bit during the month, and it's visible throughout the evening for a few hours after sunset. Obviously, as we move away from Jupiter, its angular size is reducing from about 38 down to 35 arc seconds, so that's still pretty big. And given good seeing, and it's harder because it's a bit nearer the horizon in general, then you can see the Galilean moons as they weave their way around, and at times be able to pick out the great red spot visible as an indentation of the south equatorial belt. In the highlights of the month on the night sky webpage, I do in fact have a list of the times in the evening when the red spot is sort of facing us and hence easily visible. Well, Saturn is coming towards the best of its apparition. It rises at about 10:30 at the start of the month, UT, and about 8:30 p.m. by its end. It's lying in Libra, which actually is rather low down, so it's not far above the horizon, shining with a magnitude of about plus 0.1 by the end of the month. The disk is increasing from 18.2 to 18.6 arc seconds. It's actually began its retrograde motion, so it's now moving slowly westwards in Libra. And of course, the good news is that the rings, now with a diameter of 40 arc seconds, have opened out to about 22 degrees from the line of sight, so presenting a magnificent view. With reasonable seeing and a small telescope, you should be able to spot the Cassini division that lies between the A and the B rings. Sadly, for those of us in the Northern Hemisphere, it's lying in the more southerly part of the ecliptic, so it doesn't get that high in the sky even when it's on the meridian. And even worse, it's not going to improve for a very long time. Mars is lying in Virgo, and it reaches opposition on the 8th of April, so it's visible pretty much from dusk to dawn, due south about 2 a.m. British summertime, and about 11 p.m. at the end of the month. Its brightness reaches a maximum of about minus 1.5 in the second week of the month, matching that of Sirius. It's actually closest to us on the 14th of April, when its angular size reaches 15 and a bit arc seconds. So given good seeing, it's possible to see markings on the salmon pink surface, which is about 91% illuminated this month. And you might see, for example, the polar caps, particularly the northern one, and Syrtis Major. Mars is moving westwards in Virgo, and at the end of the month nears Porrima, which is Gamma Virginis, in its retrograde motion across the sky. Mercury might just be spotted low above the horizon near sunrise at the beginning of the month. But as it passes through Superior Conjunction on the 26th of April, will not be visible for much of the remainder of the month. So to be honest, it's not really the best time to observe Mercury. And finally, Venus. As April begins, Venus rises before the onset of morning twilight, but is still less than 10 degrees elevation at sunrise, and that's because the ecliptic is at quite a shallow angle to the horizon. But shining with a magnitude of minus 4.4, it should still be fairly easy to spot if you've got a good low eastern horizon. During the month, it moves nearer to the sun in angle, its magnitude drops a touch to minus 4.2, while the angular diameter shrinks from 22 to 17 arc seconds. But at the same time, the illumination phase increases from 54 to 66%. So the effective area that's reflecting the sunlight stays about the same, which is why the magnitude doesn't change very much. Well, finally, what about the highlights? Well, I have to be honest, there isn't particularly anything very special this month. Obviously, it's still worthwhile to view Jupiter, well past opposition. The features and the Jovian surface have changed quite significantly, I should perhaps say atmosphere, in the last few years. For a while, the South Equatorial Belt vanished completely, but it's now to its normal wide state. And I have a diagram on the night sky page showing the main features. Two of the brightest asteroids, Vesta, which shines at an unusually bright magnitude of 5.8, so in principle just visible to the unaided eye, and Ceres at magnitude 7, both come to opposition, Vesta on the 13th and Ceres 2 days later. And throughout April, they remain about 2.5 degrees apart, so could both be seen together in the single field of a pair of binoculars. They lie up to the left of Spica in Virgo, and the chart on the night sky page shows their joint positions through the month. Now, you might think that the best time to observe them would be around opposition, around the 14th of the month. But in fact, if you actually look on the Stellarium Planetarium program, which I think you should all have on your computers, you'll find that the full moon is almost in front of them. So in fact, probably the best time to see them is either at the beginning, around the 6th of the month, or towards the end. And the chart shows you roughly where they'll be on those occasions. Vesta could almost qualify as a planet, as it's become differentiated with an iron core overlain by a middle density mantle and a light crustal surface. So sometimes it's now called a planetoid, but it's too small for gravity to have made it spherical, so it's not classed as a dwarf planet. On the other hand, Ceres is nearly twice as large, but it's not as bright because its albedo is much lower. and gravity has rounded its 940-kilometer shape. And because of that, it exceeds 800 kilometers, and that's about the point where the International Astronomical Union will actually classify an object as a dwarf planet like Pluto. Later in the year, in fact on July the 5th, they'll be just 10 arc minutes apart, and that might be worth looking out for. On April the 14th, after sunset, Mars is less than 5 degrees away from the nearly full moon. Obvious to find, just look southeast after sunset on the evening, and Mars in Virgo will be seen above the moon, and at the same time, the moon will be just about 4 degrees above Spica, making quite a nice tight grouping in the sky. And on April the 26th, before dawn, Venus, lying in Pisces, will be just 6 degrees away, over to the right, of a thin, crescent, waning moon. And just to say, if you look at the night sky page, I have usually, always in fact, a little bit about something to look at on the moon, and this month I've actually got Tycho and Copernicus, two very nice craters to see. And I also do an image of the month, and I thought the obvious thing to do this month would be to show the map of the polarization of the cosmic microwave background that's been discovered, and say a little bit about what that actually means. So there's a very brief summary, as I understand it, of how this affects our understanding and knowledge of the way in which our universe began. Have a good month.
Night sky north, blind night sky south, with southern space unit field.
Welcome to the April Jodcast from Carter Observatory in Wellington, New Zealand. Autumn has arrived in the southern hemisphere. Over the last month, our daylight hours have continued to get shorter as we pass the autumnal equinox, and will continue to do so until the winter solstice in June. One advantage of the longer nighttime hours means we can start our stargazing at a more reasonable hour. Three bright planets can be seen in the early evening sky. Jupiter is in the northwest and sits in front of the distant stars forming Gemini, the twins. Mars is a bright orange-red star midway up the northeastern sky. In April, it can be found near the star Spica, the brightest star in Virgo. Mars is at its closest in early April, and therefore will be at its brightest and largest when viewed through a telescope. Small telescopes reveal only a disk, but larger telescopes may reveal dark markings and a polar ice cap on Mars. Saturn follows Mars into the evening sky, and is the brightest object in Libra, the scales. A telescope magnifying 20 times shows Saturn's rings. Look for its largest moon, Titan, visible as a bright orange star nearby. The most distant of the visible planets, Saturn takes just over 30 years to complete one orbit of the Sun. In Greek mythology, it is sometimes associated with Cronus, the father of time. The first person to observe the rings around Saturn was Galileo in 1610. The rings are known to be made mostly of water ice with small amounts of other materials. Although the rings are wide, they are actually very thin, currently estimated to be 20 meters thick. By midnight, Mars and Saturn will be high overhead. Set above Spica and Mars is a distinct group of four stars forming the shape of a kite. This is Corvus, the crow. It is a small constellation of ancient origin to which Ptolemy assigned seven stars. It can be easily recognized by its four prominent stars forming a trapezium. Alpha Corvi is a magnitude 4 star, whilst Beta and Gamma are much brighter, shining at magnitude 2.7 and 2.6. Delta is a wide double easily split with a small telescope. There are a few other objects visible from small telescopes in this part of our sky. Hydra, the water snake, appears as a long path of stars winding across the sky with a distinct group of five stars forming its head. As with Corvus, there are very few objects with binoculars or telescopes in this region. Looking towards our eastern sky, we see our winter constellation Scorpius rising. The brightest star in Scorpius is Antares, the rival of Mars, shining at magnitude 1. Antares is a red supergiant star, and it is this colour that gives rise to its name as the rival of Mars. With Mars in our evening sky, it is a good chance to compare their colours. Te Marihi in Aotearoa, New Zealand, Antares is known as Rehua, and it marks the eye of the hook of Maui. Tima Tau a Maui. The curve of the scorpion's body and stinger are seen as the curve of the hook, and the distinctive triangle made by the stinger becomes the tip of the hook. In Maori mythology, it was this hook that Maui used to pull up the North Island of New Zealand out of the ocean. To Maori, the North Island is known as Te Ika o Maui, the fish of Maui. The hook crosses the widest and brightest part of our Milky Way galaxy, and it's in this region of the sky that we look towards the centre of our galaxy, estimated to be 30,000 light-years away. Follow the Milky Way up and you'll find the Pointers and Southern Cross. The Southern Cross is the smallest of the 88 constellations, and to Māori it is Te Puna, the anchor of Tamariri's Waka. Follow the Milky Way up and you'll find the Diamond and False Crosses just up from the Southern Cross. If you imagine the Southern Cross in the shape of a kite, stretch that kite's tail across the night sky from the tip to the base and you'll come to the star Achenar, the ninth brightest star in our night sky. Find the halfway point between Achenar and the Southern Cross, drop it down to the horizon and you've found our south marker. Come a further way back from Achenar towards the Southern Cross and you will find on either side the large and small Magellanic clouds, appearing as two faint hazy patches in our night sky. These two nearby galaxies are about 200,000 light years away from us. They are gravitationally bound to our Milky Way, and eventually they will merge. In the morning sky, Venus is visible as the morning star, and Mercury also be in the morning sky for the first week of April. On April the 15th, New Zealand and Australia are treated to a total lunar eclipse. The moon will rise at near or full eclipse for New Zealanders and people living in eastern Australia. For central and western Australia, moon rises after all the action has happened. To make up for this, Australia will get to see a partial eclipse of the sun on the 29th of April in the late afternoon. Many thanks for listening into our Jodcast, and we hope you have clear skies and great observing.